everyone farted. I go, go ahead. I'm on scene at 108 South 17. We've got light smoke showing from a single-story commercial building. Working fire, make it a regular alarm. Engine 1 upfront arrival. Let's see if we can get in. Let's see if there's an FPC in the back before we do anything here. I'll be at 17 command.
Well, hey there, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Justifiably Proud Productions. I am your humble host, Jim Farrell, and I'm glad to be here with everybody today, taking a moment out of the busy work week to relax and chill out and talk a little bit about response to emergencies. Recently on the YouTube channel, we posted a short clip on Fire Life Safety Initiative 5, which identifies response policies for organizations to include fire departments, EMS, and police. And what it's identifying is that making sure you have the right resources responding to the right types of incidents. And nothing could be more important these days, in my opinion, post-pandemic, just talking with industry leaders about vehicles and equipment and how hard it is to come by some of these things. It is more important now than it has ever been to really look at your response policies. I learned a long time ago, through some bargaining, some collective bargaining, sessions we did, many years ago with my employer about how, you know, the more vehicles on the road, of course, the more opportunity it has to be struck or damaged. You know, you drive by any police department, usually, I mean, really any size, you may see one or two severely damaged police cars in the back. Well, it makes sense because they're on the road for 24 hours a day. You know, and so when you start talking about ambulances and fire apparatus and these vehicles have traditionally been very hard to come by, even police cars nowadays. I mean, my city was supposed to go to all Ford Explorers, and now they're going back to Tahoes. And to be honest with you, I suspect that, like in our fire department, we're trying to get our hands on any vehicles we can. So I wanted to talk a little bit today about just how hard it is to get vehicles to outfit to make apparatus for your organization, for your first responder organization. So consider that, first of all, of course, the more unnecessarily we're on the road in a vehicle, the more chances we have of getting hurt or injured. That's what Life Safety Initiative 5 is about, making sure we're sending the right people to the right incidents. And that goes from both sending the appropriate amount of equipment and personnel to a large structure fire or a large mass casualty incident, as it is to sending the right amount or least amount of people to a dumpster fire. You know, my department's always been, well, let me give you an example. I've been in departments before where smell of gas will give a first alarm response, you know, a couple engines, an aerial, what have you. And then I've worked for cities where it sends one engine for natural gas, smell of natural gas, you know. And it all depends on just really, I think, how your policies are laid out and what the importance is. Some cities send many trucks to a fire alarm sounding. Some that I've been a part of send one or two, you know, and it's, again, based on our response policies and good fire prevention. You know, I think fire prevention and public fire education has a lot to do with it. If we know what kind of risks our city has or our community has, we can identify exactly what type of needs or resources we're going to need to go to certain situations. So just as important as it is, in my opinion, to look at the policies for two in, two out, it's just as important to look at the policies for a vehicle response and responding units. Of course, vehicular accidents are one of the top three killers of firefighters. I'm not sure what the stats are for police and EMS, but I am imagining, again, with having units on the road 24 hours a day, you run a lot higher risk of being involved in a major accident. Now, take it another step in another direction. Some of these small communities that, you know, I would visit with them a couple years ago before, let's say, pre-pandemic. These small towns wanted to buy a fire truck. And let's say your typical commercial four-door Freightliner, top control fire truck pump, a pumper with roll-up doors, maybe a couple options, couple scene lights, you know, nothing special, no foam, no boost reel. I mean, you were talking about a $300,000 fire truck. And just in the last couple weeks, visiting with some industry leaders and being at a couple different factories, it is obvious that you can't, you know, chassis, just a Freightliner four-door chassis is pushing a couple hundred thousand or close to a couple hundred thousand. And it's not when you're going to get it, it's if you're going to get it. You know, it's whenever we're kind of, the emergency services has kind of to some extent become an afterthought to the industry, I think, with all the shipping challenges and all that, whatever it is. But what I'm getting at is that a truck that you used to be able to get for $250,000, you're now going to pay probably closer to $450,000. And I don't think those price tags have hit those smaller communities yet. And I am very concerned about how the communities, the small towns who couldn't afford a $250,000 truck 4 years ago, how they ever plan on affording a $400,000 truck today. And then you take another step forward, and let's say you're a city used to buying a custom fire apparatus, you know, a custom cab truck, seating for six, you know, independent front suspension, whatever, you know, your typical custom pumper you see running down the road. And I just got word that, you know, most manufacturers are going to be pushing up around $750,000, you know. And I don't even know how some of these larger cities are going to be able to afford these trucks. Now, I don't know. I haven't priced ambulances in quite a while, but I'm assuming, I build some brush trucks from time to time, and I am assuming that just by the price increase I've seen on the brush truck chassis, that ambulances are also going to be going up in price if they haven't already. I mean, like everything else, you know. And so it's going to be very difficult, in my opinion, going forward for people to be able to afford to run their departments efficiently. And I think response policy is going to play a big part in how these departments are going to go forward, taking care of the apparatus. You know, when I first joined the fire service, it was very rare that we were out and about in the truck. You know, the trucks were meant to sit in the fire station in case of the event of a fire, you know. And I think as we've progressed, of course, the needs of communities have changed and that's things like that. But I talked to a recent local fire department recently about how, you know, they really are not allowed to leave the station unless they have a purpose and try to make multiple things happen while you're out and about there. By doing that, you reduce the wear and tear of the apparatus. And some of you are saying, wow, that's common sense, you know. Well, for large cities that have multiple things going on, it's not always that easy. When you have public fire education events or you have other events that you support in your community, you know, if the guys are going somewhere, they're taking the fire truck with them. They may not have utility vehicles, or just may not make sense to take a utility vehicle and then have to go back and get the fire truck. So take into account that, number one, the more you're on the road, the more you have an opportunity to get in an accident or have something happen with the fire apparatus or emergency vehicle. And then number two, if you're a small community and you have, let's say, one or two fire apparatus, and you lose one of those apparatus to a major accident, it could be an accident, like a motor vehicle accident. It could also be, you know, you're sitting on scene protecting the scene and somebody slams into your vehicle and totals it. It could be, you know, grass fire catches up to you and catches your vehicle on fire, totaling it. Folks, be aware that, I mean, you're talking 2-year delivery if you ordered today to get a new fire apparatus. It's going to be very hard to pick up an apparatus, especially one that meets all your needs quickly. The days of purchasing a demo truck or a unit coming down the line are getting few and far in between because everybody's grabbing them up as soon as they're being ordered. You know, manufacturers, of course, will order these trucks and have them coming down the line, but they're being sold as soon as they're getting entered into the pre-production. So take into account that, okay, so now I've totaled my 1989 pumper truck that's been our go-to, or something's happened to it. It's done. There's just, we can't put any more money into it. So not only do I have to sit there and find a way to come up with, let's say you're a small community, you got to come up with $400,000 to buy a new fire apparatus, but also you're going to have to wait 2 years to get it, you know? So you're going to be down for 2 years. Now, I don't know about the used vehicle market and how that's going to change or increase, but it's never been as important as it is now to take care of the apparatus. And, you know, I don't think people understand the challenges that come with getting new apparatus, equipping new apparatus, and I mean, for instance, the ISL9, the Cummins ISL9 motor is no longer going to be made anymore. So everybody's going to have to go to the ISX12. And so everybody's enjoyed the ISL9 and it's nice price point, you know, but I'm being told by industry leaders that come as of Friday, I believe, the new ISX12. I need to verify which one that is, adds about $60,000 to your fire apparatus. And I'm sure that some of this stuff is the cost of goods. But at the same time, it's like, I think people have been waiting for pricing to go backwards and I just don't see it, you know? I just don't see prices going back. It's becoming more and more the norm, especially if you're a department that puts a lot of equipment and a lot of accessories on your fire apparatus. You're looking at $1 million pumper. I don't know how the cities of like Houston, San Antonio, and places like that are going to do it. I was in Chicago recently, and I was at the Wrigleyville station. I think it's engine 78. The guy was sharing with us that, you know, they're riding on a 2001 Laverne. Laverne, of course, is no longer in business anymore, but they're riding on that. And the firefighter was telling me that the city decided several years ago that it was more beneficial and more cost effective to refurbish their trucks, at least some of them, and put a new tank, new pump, and all that stuff than it was to purchase. You know, and I don't know how the market is going to change, but I definitely know it's changing. You know, the other thing is these smaller towns that have these challenges, what used to be maybe relatively easy to run a fire department, I don't know how easy it's going to be going forward. I know in Central Texas, Emergency Services Districts, ESDs have been populating like crazy. And it seems like a lot of people are doing that. I could see a lot of countywide fire departments happening, which will help provide an economy to these smaller towns who may end up subcontracting the county to provide their fire services. You know, when a fire department struggles just to get their bunker gear inspected, for example, and maintained, you can imagine what it takes just to get an oil change done on their fire truck, a PM. So I just wanted to provide some insight today and talk about that. It's not just Life Safety Initiative number 5, which was written many, many years ago by the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. It's not just about what units we send to what, but I mean, if any of you have driven by any of the Ford dealerships, Dodge dealership lots tend to be full. Chevrolet has gotten a little bit fuller. But really, drive by some of your auto dealerships and look how many new vehicles are on the lot. They're hard to find. I mean, my department's always been a Ford or Chevrolet type department, and we're looking at alternative vehicles, alternative manufacturers, just because we're hoping to get our hands on some vehicles because we're so short of vehicles. And what I want to stress is that it's not looking like it's getting any easier, and I don't know why or how the message isn't being put out there. But I was visiting a city nearby the other day, looking at one of their foam systems, and they got some beautiful brand new 3/4 ton Chevrolet trucks, nice graphics and everything. And I just thought they looked so sharp. And the captain had told me, he's like, well, you know, we wanted them in red, but we couldn't get them. We just had to settle for what we could settle for. And I just want to prepare our listeners and our viewers to understand that it's getting tougher and tougher to get vehicles to provide emergency services. I don't know so much how it is on the equipment side. I know, being that I order equipment at work, some stuff does take a while. I mean, we ordered ground ladders, like 5 or 6 extension ladders, maybe November. And we're told we'll get them in September, October. And I also know, visiting with industry leaders recently, especially up north, where a lot of fire apparatuses are being made, is that there is definitely a need for workers. And we're talking about factories that typically you had to know somebody or have a family member already a part of the company in order to get involved to some extent. I mean, not like nepotism or anything, but it was hard to get in there. And now when you drive up there, around the different areas where manufacturers are up in the Midwest, it's a constant. You see a lot of hiring signs and it's like, wait a minute. And then the one factory in particular that I visited, you know, it was talked a little bit about how they're having a hard time finding workers, you know, and some of these are union jobs. Like, these are not just jobs. These are careers. These are things that people have done, spent, you know, there's generations of families of welders and people like that, that I guess they're not there anymore. I don't know if it's because of the tech sector and people wanting to do different stuff or just industry changing, but these are jobs that used to be sought after and were in high demand. And now you're seeing now hiring signs all over the place, for some of these manufacturers. So, you know, I encourage everybody to be aware of this kind of stuff. It's good to be flexible, you know, and I know, like, you're a town that you only get to order bunker gear every 3 to 4 years. And when you buy it, you want it, and you want it the right way, and you want it the way you want it. You know, you want it like Burger King. And I've seen it now from both the sales side as well as the customer side. There needs to be some flexibility and understanding that, I mean, there's still shipping challenges. I'm watching stuff all the time about there's still shipping challenges and there's still fees, you know, special service fees to account for volatile shipping, and we can't get these parts in, and you know, we can't get that in. It's going to be another 6 weeks, 8 weeks. And I mean, don't get me wrong, we need to make sure, we need to trust but verify when we're dealing with vendors and stuff, but we're still not back to anywhere near where we were before. It's obvious, trying to order equipment and parts and get them in a timely manner. And it's weird because, some stuff will get way quicker than we expected, you know? And then other things, it'll be months, or it'll be, we can't give a date yet until we know for sure, you know? And so be aware of that, especially if you're a small community. You know, you haven't bought an ambulance in 10 years or you haven't bought police cars in 2 or 3 years. It's going to be difficult for you to get vehicles quickly. And here's the other thing. Check this out. Ford and Chevrolet and all these people that have these government order banks, they don't coincide with... And they don't care to coincide, because when you're talking commercial fleet, I buy a lot of Ford chassis. And when you're dealing with commercial fleet, it's not just commercial in a sense of cities and municipalities and counties. It's like commercial fleet, like the electric company and TxDOT or DOT, whatever DOT you have. It's ambulances, it's private ambulance companies, it's air conditioning people. Those are commercial, you know, bug pest control. Those are considered commercial accounts. So the order banks only open up for a certain time frame. So Ford says we're going to build X amount of F-550s and the order bank's going to start August 15th through October 15th. Well, if you're a municipality and your fiscal year starts in October, you're probably not going to get an order in. You're not. You're going to go out for bid. By the time you go out for bid, let's say you're ordering a fleet of 15 Ford Explorers for your police department, and then two F-250s for Parks Department, and then two F-550s for trash pickup or whatever. Your new budget comes in October. You know, if you're like our city, you got a procedure that you have to follow. You have to do all this stuff on the before you go out to publish. You could have the spec in your hand. You could have all the specs already written October 1. Even if you put the specs out for bid October 2nd, you know, you got to give 30 days. By the time you've given that time to put out the bids, that order bank's already closed. Most vendors are not, they're only going to quote you what they ordered in over, because that's what they know they're going to have in stock. But if you're asking for X amount of quantity, they're not going to be able to bid you, because they don't know, number one, what the pricing is going to be, because the order bank's not going to open until August of next year. They don't know what that model is going to cost. They don't know the availability of that model. You know, there's all these intricacies. So I would encourage you, if you're a purchasing agent and you're going to be buying a vehicle come October, find out when those dates are and see what you need to do to get the ball rolling. Don't get caught with, that's just the facts. The manufacturers and the dealers don't operate around municipalities. We're probably not, municipalities and counties are probably not the manufacturer's biggest purchasers. You know, it's probably the pest control people and the construction people and the oil field industry and all these. I mean, those people buy hundreds of vehicles every year, where a large city like the one I'm a part of maybe orders, you know, 30 or 40. So keep that in mind, that your timelines don't necessarily coincide. Don't be surprised if come November you want to go order an F-550 and you can't find one. Now you can order on the retail side, but you're going to have to pay a little bit more for that. And, you know, you may not get the government concessions that they offer, which even then those are getting smaller and smaller. So, the main thing here is, number one, talking about keeping your vehicles in tip-top shape. And, you know, we're going to be asked to do more with less. No doubt about it. If you run a decent-sized department, let's say you got 4 stations and 15 different apparatus, until something changes I don't know what's going to change. I don't know if people are going to have to start paying more in taxes or what's going to happen, but I don't foresee a lot of cities being able to afford $1 million fire trucks every year going forward. I just don't see it. So number one, taking care of your units, making sure you're safe on the road, only sending what you need to send to those types of alarms. Of course, aggressive, being safe and aggressive, assertive driving, you know, being aware of your surroundings, your situational awareness, canceling when you're canceled, you know, all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, understanding that you order a new custom pumper today, you're not going to get it for 2 years. So, you know, it's kind of like from the administrative side, it's like we need to be ordering, if we do have units in the queue to be replaced, we need to let those people know. And then, of course, hopefully get that ball rolling, because I don't know about your city, but I mean, most cities I don't think can be down for a long time, and then hoping to get something quick, you know. I just I want everybody to be aware of that and share a little bit about that. So this week's special was on life safety initiative number 5, the response policies. I encourage everybody to take a look at those and modify those. Remember that your standard operating procedures or guidelines are a living document and should be reviewed accordingly from time to time. And just everybody stay safe out there. Take care of each other. Remember that you got a friend here at Justifiably Proud Productions. If you like this content and want to hear more, please like, subscribe, comment, share. I appreciate everybody who reaches out and gives me different ideas for topics. Thank you, and have a wonderful, wonderful week. Take care then. Bye-bye.